Good morning, everyone. This morning, as I was packing up my visuals for you this morning, my wife came in and she said, "I have to read you something." And it was a story of a pastor who on Sunday morning was preparing an illustration for his congregation. He had placed worms in a jar of alcohol, worms in a jar of tobacco, and worms in good soil. So on the Sunday morning in his sermon, he held up each one of the samples as examples of whatever his point was. And he asked the congregation, "So what is your conclusion by looking at these three samples?" And one lady in the very back, she shouts out, "If you smoke and drink, you won't have worms." It is possible to lose the message by the visual, but I hope that's not true this morning. I'm going to show you something that everybody here knows what it is. Interesting. I tried this in South Africa. Not one person knew what it was. Be careful with your illustrations. Okay. Oh, yes. Dr. Jones says this is not just salt. This is Morton's salt. Morton's salt. Classic, it says on the front. And on the back, it has a slogan. You remember what the slogan is? When it rains, it pours. When it rains, it pours. Since 1848, Morton has been America's leading producer of salt. Salt for water softening, for ice control, for agricultural and industrial uses, as well as for grocery. But in 1911, right there she is, in 1911, a little girl with an umbrella and her famous slogan, "When it rains, it pours," was placed on a round box as a marketing experiment. It has been incredibly successful, so that anymore you don't even need to see the label, just a round blue box. You know what it is. That little girl and that slogan has appeared ever since 1914. Salt. Or sodium chloride is a readily available, inexpensive bulk mineral found primarily in two locations. One is in salt pans. An illustration of a salt pan is where? Bonneville Salt Flats. Okay, all the racing. Another illustration of where salt comes from is underground mines, where rock salt is mined, the primary source of American salt. Over 100 countries today produce a significant amount of salt, with many others on a smaller scale. But the United States is the biggest producer of salt in the world, accounting for approximately 21% of the world's use of salt. Now, you should remember that salt is used in a number of products. In fact, you may not know this morning that salt is used in the production of 14,000 products. 14,000 products. Let me show you a couple. I don't wear this very often. Why is salt used in the production of cloth? That's correct, because of the dye. The more salt you use, the more color fast it becomes. Okay, so that's this one's held up pretty well from some tropical vacation. Yours truly. Okay, that's one illustration. Here's another one. This one was made for my wife by her grandmother. Salt is used in the production of leather. If you're wearing leather this morning, or you have a leather case, or a Bible cover, or whatever it is, salt is used in the tanning process of leather. Couldn't have the kind of leather we have today without salt. One other illustration. Recognize it? Salt is used in the production of plastics. Imagine our world without plastics. And salt is so very important in the production of plastic. The point is, salt is indispensable. Salt is invaluable. Salt is irreplaceable in giving value to our world. Look at it again in Matthew 5, verse 13. Matthew 5, verse 13, there's this intriguing pronouncement and question regarding salt that Jesus stated at the conclusion of the Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5. He makes this statement, "You are the salt of the earth." You are the salt of the earth. And then he continues and says in Mark 5, 13, "But if salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men." Now, if you were to read that passage in other translations, it goes like this. If salt becomes tasteless, how is its saltiness to be restored? It is now good for nothing but to be thrown away and trodden underfoot. Or this one. If salt becomes dirty, how will it become pure again? Dirty salt has no value except to be thrown on roads so people can walk over it. Or the third one. If salt becomes weakened, by what means will it become salty? It no longer has the strength for anything except being thrown out to be trodden over by men. But here's the question you should ask yourself this morning after you read Matthew 5, verse 13. How do you re-salt salt? How do you re-salt salt? Now, I have heard of desalination plants. I've seen some on the West Coast. But I have never heard of resalination plants. Have you? So, I ask you this morning, seminarians, how do you resalt salt? Salt has to stay salty to be of value. Notice these similar texts by Jesus. Mark 9, verse 49, it reads this way. Mark 9, 49. "Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can you make it salty again?" Or Luke 14, look at this one. Luke 14, verse 34. "Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is fit neither for the soil nor for the manure pile. It is thrown out. He who has ears to hear, let him hear." By the way, do you know where the largest salt mine in the world is? Oh, you need to know this. Really? Don't know? Guess where? Come on. It's where? It's under the city of Detroit. The largest salt mine in the world is in Michigan. In Michigan. And remember, the United States supplies 21% of the world use of salt. Under the city of Detroit, there is an estimated 170,000 square miles of salt. You understand that? 170,000 square miles of salt. In fact, it's estimated that there's so much salt in Michigan, starting in Detroit, that there's an estimated 71 trillion unmined tons of salt still there. So I'd like you to get the point that there's enough salt to go on and on and on and on and on and on. Okay? There's plenty of salt. And in those enormous salt mines, which go down for thousands of feet, have been there for thousands of years, the salt is still salty. It's still fresh. It has not lost its savor. It's as fresh as the day it was formed there. Understand, again, that salt is the most stable compound almost that we know about, sodium chloride. Or consider the Bonneville Salt Flats, where many of the speed trials occur. They extend for 159 square miles in northwestern Utah, and the depth of the salt in that location is 6 feet deep. So don't worry about salt giving out. There's plenty to go around, all right? Now, when Jesus made this statement about salt losing its flavor, he really grabbed the attention of his audience. Because they lived, remember, they lived only 40 miles from the greatest salt lake in the world. The Dead Sea. 1,385 feet below sea level. 8.6 times as salty as the ocean. You've seen the pictures of people just laying on top of the water reading a magazine. You can't sink salt water. Jesus' audience was well acquainted with salt. And they depended on salt very much as a staple of everyday life. For example, they use it for seasoning. Bring out the inherent flavor of food. They use it as a preservative to preserve meat or other foods. It would prevent decay. They used it for a unit of exchange. They use it in the place of money. They use it as a disinfectant. It was placed on wounds and sores. It was a cleansing agent. And of course, they used it for burial preparation. So they knew about salt. They also knew a very simple reality, and that is that salt stays salty. So when Jesus made this statement, he got their attention right away. They knew that salt does not lose its flavor. It's always salt. It's always salty. It is such a stable compound. It cannot change by itself. Something else has to change salt. Some outside force must mess with its chemical composition to make sodium chloride ineffective. Left alone, salt is salt. Always has been, always will be. So let me ask you, how could salt lose its flavor. Well, let me tell you how they knew about it in Palestine. Most houses had an oven, but the oven was outdoors. The oven was a clay structure. They would dig a pit, and they would place this clay oven on a bed of bricks, and underneath the bricks would be a layer of salt. The reason for the salt was salt reflects heat. So as they would have it there, it would more evenly distribute the heat. Over time of cooking and mixing and stirring and spilling and spoiling, the salt would lose its ability to reflect heat. So the man of the house would come along, remove the stove, pull up the bricks, take out the salt, and guess where it went? In the streets. That's right. They would put a new layer of salt, put the bricks down, put the oven back on top, and now we'd be back in business again. Now, why did it lose its ability? Over time, the salt lost its saltiness, if you could say that, by being diluted, by having impurities added to it. Those impurities may have looked white like sodium chloride, but they did not have the quality of salt. And if enough impurities were mixed with sodium chloride, the salt would no longer act or taste like salt, its essential elements having been leached away, leaving behind a residue. And it is in this context that Jesus makes a profound declaration when he says, "You are the salt of the earth." I don't know about you, but I think I would have chosen a different metaphor. I mean, wouldn't it sound better to you if he had said, "You are the sugar of the earth"? Or how about, "You are the honey of the globe"? Or perhaps, "You are the milk of the world"? Or, "You are the perfume of this planet"? No. He says, "You're salt. You are salt." And Jesus did not lie when he said this. As salt gives food a rich, pleasant taste, his followers would give value and flavor to the lives of those they impacted. You, students of the seminary, are an influence to all you encounter. You are salt. But he goes on to say that if we are not radiating with flavor, reflecting the teachings of God in our lives, what use are we? Salt without flavor has no use, and it can even be detrimental to the things that it comes in contact with. Maybe its best use then is to put it on icy roads in Michigan, to be ground under the tires of vehicles, and then washed and leached away. But there's more in this passage. Jesus says, "You are the salt of the church." Imagine if Jesus had said, "You are the salt of the church." There'd be no need of conversions because we don't need or want anybody else with us. There'd be no church planning, cell churches, or outreach because we are all that counts. We are the salt of the church. There would be no outsiders in our schools because contamination of our young people might occur. Medical institutions would serve only us and at great discount. publishing enterprises would only print materials for us. And tithe would be collected from others to be used by us. Before too long, we would be just a block of salt. A block of salt, collected, solidified, unified, purified, putrefied, and petrified, standing immovable on the plains of the Vale of Siddon, self-absorbed, unwilling to venture into the unknown of God's leading, wanting only to stay put in the city of familiarity. Then you become a block of salt. But Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth." Notice, seminarian, Jesus did not say, "You will be the salt." He said, "You are salt." He did not say that some future time you would be salt, that at some time in the future when all of your pastoral and ministerial skills have been solidified, when you are gainfully and happily employed in some coveted ministry setting, when everything is right about your spiritual life, when all the components are correctly lined up, then you'll be the salt of the earth. No, he says, "You are the salt of the earth." When Jesus made this statement, he put it in the present tense, the now. That means you are salt right now. Well, when I came to work here at the seminary in 2001 from Georgia Kermlin, I was walking around the halls with the then dean, John McVeigh, who is now the president of Walla Walla University. And I saw him repeatedly meet students in the hall that he would introduce to me, and he'd say, "This is Pastor Bill. This is Pastor Ellen, Pastor Sue." Every student he titled as a pastor. I thought maybe at first it was a slip of the tongue, that he was just being nice. But as he continued to do that day in and day out, I realized something. He was saying, "You are salt. You don't have to wait. You are now a pastor." Too many of us have thought that we should work harder at being salt. When Jesus says we are salt, it's not about what we will become. It's about who he has already made us to be. It's when you're connected to Jesus, you can't help but be what you are, and that's salt. The seasoning, the preservative, the unit of exchange, the disinfectant that this world is perishing for. Maybe that's why he said, "Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can you make it salty again?" Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another. Boy, there's a series of sermons for you to think about. I think he was saying that we should flavor our world with who we are in him, because there's no other salt available. Matthew also constructs these sentences in such a way that they highlight an emphatic point, one other point. And that is an emphasis on the first word, you. You see, his audience would have expected him to point to the religious leaders and the scribes and the lawyers and say, "You." But no.
He was talking to every single person and says, "You are the salt." You are the salt.
But you may say, Walt, I feel more like pepper. Think about the difference between salt and pepper. We have already established the fact that salt is one of the most stable chemical elements around. It just doesn't change. You can drown it in water, but when you dry it out, it's still salt. Pepper. Pepper is so fragile, it loses its flavor and aroma through evaporation. So, we have pepper in airtight canisters, okay, to help preserve pepper's original spiciness. Pepper can lose its flavor even when it's exposed to light. That's why you see pepper in colored canisters. And since pepper's aromics can evaporate so quickly, most culinary sources recommend grinding whole peppercorns before you use them. But salt? Cool, hot, wet, dry, burn, still salt. Still salt. So here's the question. How do you students and staff of the seminary become Christ-like? Salt. Christ-like salt. To all you encounter. How do you stay Christ-like in all of your learning and teaching and stay salt? What is it that keeps your spiritual life from dissolving away in the grind of learning and teaching? Is Christian ministry just for those with the stiffest backbone, the largest arsenal of proof texts, the loudest preaching, and the most vigorous theology? When it gets rough living ministry reality, how do you stay true? How do you keep from being just another block of salt? Is there any hope for we regular salt folks? Colossians 1 and verse 16. For by Christ all things were created. Colossians 1:16. Things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authority, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things consist. Salt does not exist for itself. It serves its purpose best when it is spread around. Salt. Christian ministry cannot exist in a vacuum. Our new learning and understanding of Christ has a profound influence on the context in which you live. It is destined to penetrate the totality of your family, your community, your world. In other words, there are no boundaries for salt. Every single facet of life is influenced by being in Christ and being his salt. No wonder Jesus chose an element that influences 14,000 products to exemplify who we are in Christ. Whoever has such encounters with Christ becomes inevitably involved with salting their world. It's not just a part of your natural gene pool. The saying about salt is the first pronouncement of the gospel and the final definition of discipleship. And I have been stunned to realize that salt is used in every sacrifice of the Old Testament system. Salt. Why? Because when you burn salt,
it has a visible smoke trail. And when the sacrifices were offered with perfumes and salt, you had visual and you had smell of the presence of God's beauty. That's why Paul proclaimed, God has chosen to make known among the Gentiles the glorious riches of this mystery, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. So you thought you were not important, that your little bit didn't amount to much, that you're living a quiet life, making no staggering statement, just existing is not important. I think you should be amazed this morning at how profoundly important you are in salting others. So I have a charge for you in closing. Faculty of the seminary, you are the salt of the world. I propose that the salt you distribute is more important than the information you give. We will long remember you for who you are, long after we've forgotten what you taught us. Be salt. To minister seminarians, you are the salt of the world. The impact of your life is not on hold until you have a position in some institution. Your future impact has already begun to be seen and smelt. Be salt. So I say to all of you this morning, leave, get out of here, be salt.